Welcome to season 4 of 5 Things with Lynn Hirschberg. In my non-podcast life, I'm the editor-at-large at W Magazine. One of my constant goals at W is to champion women that are unique and passionate. I'm a total believer in those who use their voices and their experiences to break barriers, who take the personal and make it universal. I'm also a huge country music fan, which brings me to my first guest, Kelsey Ballerini. Around 10 years ago, Ballerini burst into the country music scene. Her bright, ridiculously addicting songs popped off the radio, and she was an immediate sensation. Recently, Ballerini's career path has become more complicated and a bit darker. Her recent divorce from fellow singer Morgan Evans inspired Ballerini to pour her soul into Rolling Up the Welcome Mat, an EP about their breakup. With these new, heartfelt songs, Ballerini has attracted a new audience. Recently, she performed on Saturday Night Live and co-hosted the CMT Awards. At the CMT Awards, she broke more boundaries by bringing 4 alumni from RuPaul's Drag Race on stage to perform with her. Ballerini was making a powerful statement about inclusion and tolerance in the wake of Tennessee's anti-LGBTQ+ legislation. It gives me great pleasure to introduce Kelsey Ballerini. The person in your life that's had the biggest impact or someone that's meant a lot to you?
This is the easiest one to answer for me. It's my mom. I've always been extremely close with her. And I think as I've come up for air the last few years and really in my brain, I kind of just identify it as like, I think I'm finally an adult.
Well, we're never adults really to our mothers.
Yeah, true. But I feel like now I've shifted from having conversations with her from being very daughter to mother to like woman to woman. And that's been a really beautiful transition for us. And I think just she's always been such a like present and giving and selfless mother. But just to know her now as a woman and just a pillar woman in my life, it's been a really beautiful shift. And she's just really taken care of me in a different way in the last specifically year. And she's for sure the most important person in my life.
Was she someone who you always sang in front of or performed in front of?
Yeah, because for the longest time, like I loved music. I grew up, you know, being in glee club and leading worship in church and all that kind of stuff. So I always loved music. But when it came to the idea of even writing a song or singing by myself, that kind of stuff, it was really intimidating at first, really scary. You feel naked, you know, like people are looking at you and you're like, oh my God, what if they don't like this? What if they don't like this style or they don't like the song that I wrote or whatever? So she was always the first person that I not only showed things to, but ever had those first honest conversations of, hey mom, like, you know I did dance for 10 years and I know I did gymnastics for a couple of years and I did track and all this, but I think I like this more than all of that combined. I think this is more than just a hobby. I think this might be like the love of my life. And what do you think of like, what do you think of that? What would that be like? You know,
what did she say?
I mean, she moved me to Nashville when I was 15, she uprooted her entire life. Yeah. And I think that's what it was. I think it was her watching it go from a hobby to a passion and watching me just become obsessed, like truly obsessed with music and learning the ropes. And I started researching Nashville and what, you know, what's a producer, what's a co-writer. I didn't know any of that stuff. So I took it really seriously from the very beginning. As much as I loved it, and it was also my play, it was something that I was like, oh no, I'm obsessed. I have to make this work.
Was country always your first love, music wise?
It's interesting. I mean, my gut says yes, but the truth is, you know, I grew up on a farm in East Tennessee and my first concert was Britney Spears. And that's really, I'm somewhere in the middle. My parents listened to everything growing up. I have all these memories of my dad playing Frank Sinatra and Tony Bennett and all that kind of stuff around the house. And then my mom listened to Top 40. But my lifestyle was very, what was on WIVK, the local country station. So I think it was just kind of everything. And when I started writing songs, I still was listening to everything. And I think just naturally where it fell sounded like a country song because it's where I was raised. It's kind of, It was my roots. It's who I am. So I never tried to make it anything. It kind of came out that way. But it is interesting because I've really grappled with my whole career. People being like, you're not country, you know, because I'll put a beat drop in instead of a banjo. But I kind of always just lead with the, this is what feels right. And I'm the music maker and it's my job to write honestly. And I'm doing myself a disservice and the craft a disservice to pigeonhole it in any way. So it's been a journey. But to me, in my heart of hearts, I've always believed it's country.
I think it's country too, but I always thought you had a real pop, you know, vein running through you because it's a little bit like Taylor Swift, who we all think is a genius, and we will just say that up front.
Yeah.
But I feel like, you know, she was always country, but there was definitely a pop strain to what she was doing from the very beginning.
And Shania, and Dolly.
And Shania.
Yeah, and Dolly, yeah. And Faith Hill. I mean, there's such a through line of women that are country, you know, country icons that definitely crossed over. I just, that excites me. There's nothing scary about that to me.
Especially with your latest record, especially with what you just recorded. I mean, it's not even right to call it crossover because it's just so emotional. It feels like it takes its roots from country, but it's bigger than that. It's funny that you say Frank Sinatra because I could even imagine Frank Sinatra singing those songs.
Well, this project has just been, it's been such a case study for me because, you know, I made my commercial record and I put it out in September. And that was the record that, like, you know, it is in my record deal contract. And it's the one that I like was blocking off time for 2 years to write for and all this stuff and did all the promo around and all the press. That was called Subject to Change, and that came out in September. And then my life was going through a major, major shift. And I truly thought, like, I'm gonna go crazy. I'm gonna implode if I don't handle this like how I always have. And that's by writing about it. Like, I started writing songs because my parents got divorced. Like, that was the catalyst. And I was 12 and I was at that really tender age where you're already kind of like, you know, I got tall, boys got cute, everything felt different. And then and then my life was going through this really big shift and I'm an only child, and it just kind of, I really was struggling, and I started writing songs and it really saved me. And so I really reconnected to my 12-year-old self in this last season because I was like, this is how I have to deal with this or it's going to be bad. And so I did. And it's the least I have ever cared about the actual craft of what I do. And that sounds crazy to say out loud, but it's the truth. I did not care if the rhyme was perfect. I didn't even care if it rhymed half the time. It was so train of thought. It was so pure. I did the whole thing with one other person, one woman.
And it's an EP. An EP is not the most usual way to release music in Nashville.
Yeah. And I didn't even tell management or the label I was making it. Like, it was just untouched. It was so pure. And I certainly didn't think, okay, well, is this going to fit on country radio? Because that was never the intention, because I had just released this record that was the intention for.
Right.
So,
and you had a hit. You had hits on that record.
Yeah. I mean, my current single is called If You Go Down, I'm Going Down Too. And that's from that record. That's at country radio. So it's still serving its purpose. But it's when we put out Welcome, Matt, like, it's just had this really different life than anything I've ever, ever put out. And so we're playing catch up, kind of.
We'll get back to the genius that is Welcome, Matt.
Okay.
So tell me a place in your life that has particular meaning.
Central High School in Knoxville, Tennessee. I was there for my first 2 years of high school before I moved to Nashville to do music. And it's just, I think everyone has a place that represents a certain chapter in their life or a certain season in their life that was really defining. And for me, it was those 2 years because, you know, I was learning how to deal with my parents' divorce. I was really growing up pretty quickly. I was falling madly in love with music, and I was starting to find a really good core group of friends. And it was the first time my music teacher allowed me to sing a song that I'd written on stage at the high school theater. There was also like a really, not to get so dark, but there was a shooting at my high school, and
oh my God,
I was there, and it was just a life defining few years is like the best way I know how to describe it. And I just look back now as an adult and I look at the amount of growth that I kind of was forced into those 2 years, and it truly shaped the core of me now. And I'm grateful for that. So, I mean, I just went home for a wedding 2 days ago and I went to my high school. I always stop by. Sometimes I go in, sometimes I sit in the parking lot, sometimes I cry, sometimes I smile. Like, I just have such a appreciation for it. Yeah.
Was it difficult for you to leave after only 2 years? I mean, that's pretty wrenching.
Oh, it was so bittersweet. Because I had just joined like the Glee Club and I had a really, really solid group of friends for the first time and all of that. But it was bittersweet because I was moving to Nashville to do this. My mom was uprooting her life. So I didn't really have the luxury of being sad because I was like, man, she's doing this for me. I have to go. I have to go do this, you know?
Did you write any songs about the shooting?
It's so funny you asked that. I didn't for the longest time because I couldn't process it for a long time. I have learned in years of therapy now that out of fight, flight, or freeze, I'm a freezer. That's my trauma response. I freeze. And so I froze in the moment and I have thought out bit by bit through years. And so for a long time, I couldn't really talk about it. And I was starting to write a book a couple years ago. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, I wrote a book of poetry. I put it out in 2021. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And it was the first time that I just, you know, it was COVID times and it was my passion project and my pivot. And I was like, I think I need to go there. And so I started writing about all these things in my life that I hadn't really shared before. And I was reading them to my friend who's like my sister. And she was like, hey, Kels, you're leaving something out. And I was like, I am. And she was like, I think you need to write about it. And so I did. And I put it out in that book. It's a poem called His Name is Ryan. And that was my first time really giving it the outlet that I've given everything else in my life. And it was really healing.
Hmm. Did you hear ever from his family or?
I did. Yeah, I did. I heard from, I think it was his cousin.
Wow.
Yeah.
And when you went to Nashville initially, was that must have been pretty scary.
Oh, terrifying. We moved at the beginning of summer. I was 15. I couldn't drive and I knew no one. And my mom worked a full-time job. So every day I was like alone, chilling, trying to figure out what I had just done. But I remember because I've always had this knowingness where it translated into confidence later after I did a lot of work on myself, but it was always a knowingness of, I will get this out. I will make this work. You know, I didn't know how it was going to look, but I knew I'd figure it out. So that whole summer, my mom would leave to go to work and I would wake up and I would watch CMT and GAC music videos. And at the end of the video, it would have the writer's names and the director and the labels. And I would write it all down and go to my mom's computer and I'd Google everything and start making lists of people that I wanted to write with and meet with. And I took myself to school that summer and I learned a lot before I even could get in the room with anyone.
Wow. I love that. And then when you finally met those people, what was that like?
I'm a fangirl. I'm a fangirl over everyone. And I still am. I never want to lose that part of myself. So like, I remember the first time I met Hillary Lindsay, who's my favorite songwriter of all time. I was losing my mind and she's like, I just remember her being like, I thought you would, you know, freak out about the people that I'm writing these songs for. And I'm like, no, I do with them as well. But you're the craftsman and that you're the craftswoman, you know, and that to me it's always been the most special part of music is the songwriter.
That's a great thing about Nashville, that there's still people there creating music in that way. It's remained the same in that way, which is a wonderful thing. That there's still people like writing songs.
Yeah. I mean, it's part of the culture of that town is writing and co-writing and writing retreats and bus trips and all of that. It's part of the culture.
I know. I love that. I love that there's still radio also. I love that, you know, country radio still counts for something because a lot of other radio doesn't.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, it's shifting like every other genre. We're streaming and XM and all that, you know, it's definitely different than it used to be, but it's still a big king for sure.
I And what thing in your life, what inanimate object has meant something to you? Can be a gold record on the wall, could be a stuffed animal, could be a pair of cutoffs that you wore in your first video.
I had a couple options here, but I think
that I just have to say, as a fangirl myself, you do have tremendous legs.
Oh my God. Thank you. Thank you. I will receive that compliment. Thank you for saying that.
I can tell that you danced because you have great legs, but you also have dancer's legs.
You know what's funny? I also have dancer's feet because I did ballet for the longest time. And if you have dancer's legs, you also have dancer's feet, which ain't so cute. So
yeah, I have the same thing.
But okay, so I was thinking about what thing to tell you about. And I think I'm going to tell you this story. So I grew up in Knoxville, moved to Nashville. And I guess this was maybe a year ago now. My mom's friend, who still lives in Knoxville, was like, "Hey, Kels, your childhood home is on Zillow. I was looking for a house. It popped up. How crazy is that?" And I was like, "Man, I wonder if the inside still looks the same. I'm going to look it up." So one night I couldn't sleep. I get on Zillow. I'm like looking through all the photos. And the last photo on the link, I left this house when I was 12. The last photo on the link was a photo of the mailbox, and it still had Ballerini down the side of it.
Oh, wow.
And this was, I mean, a year ago. So it had been, God, a long time. I'm 29. I left when I was 12. And I just remember thinking, like, I had a visceral reaction to the photo. I was like, I feel weird about that mailbox still being there. And I kind of feel like it's mine. I kind of want it. And so then I went home to shoot the music video for a song that I did with Kenny Chesney called Half of My Hometown.
Yes. I was going to say that was all in your high school, right?
Yes. Yes, it was. We wrapped that video. And me and a couple of friends, I'd ordered a new mailbox on Amazon. I will say that because I do know what I'm about to say was illegal. but I went to my childhood home. It was like the dead of night. And we had a screwdriver and we unscrewed the mailbox. Well, I'll also tell you, I'm telling this out of order, but I cold called the real estate agent. I was like, "Hey, You're selling my childhood home. I saw that the mailbox is still there. Could I have it?" And he was like, "You're Kelsey." I was like, "Yes, I am." And he was like, "Listen, I legally cannot tell you that you can take the mailbox. It's like, you know, private property. But if you were to take it and replace it, I think it'd be fine." And I was like, "Heard." So I unscrewed the mailbox and it's like, I mean, it is like falling apart. It's like water damaged. There's rust on it. Like, it is not a cute mailbox. And I replaced it with this fresh one from Amazon. And I was doing a lot of work in therapy at the time where I was writing letters to my younger self. And so now I put those letters in my childhood mailbox that I stole.
Oh, I love that. That's so great.
Yeah, it's in the house. I mean, it's gross, but it means it holds a lot of weight to me.
Did you think about buying the house?
No. I don't think I would ever go back to my hometown to live there. Like, I love going to visit my dad and I love going to, you know, friends' weddings and that kind of stuff. But no, and I think that house holds a lot of, you know, bad energy.
So. Oh, I see. Okay. And how many letters do you have in the box now? How many letters have you written to yourself?
Several. And I also keep letters and I have for a long time. So I had like a box of letters from childhood that my mom had written me or my dad or birthdays and that kind of stuff. And those are all in there too. It's a little hodgepodge.
Oh, I love that. And so now you're going to take it with you wherever you go.
Yeah, that'll be in my house, wherever my house is.
I love that. That's one of the best things ever. That's a really good one.
Oh, good. What did you do it? How did you lose it? Was it true? Do you remember? Were you confused when you thought you knew? Now you see through it. You can tell her.
All right, so now we come to my favorite question, which is something terrible that turned out to be something great. Meaning something that looked like the end of the world at the time, but then turned out to be, in a strange way, a good thing. Of course, I'm sure there's things that you can think of that you wrote a whole record about.
Yeah, but I mean, that can't not be my answer, you know? It was getting divorced. It took me so long to even get to the point where that was something that I entertained just because of my parents, you know, and watching that happen. I was terrified. I was really, really scared to do that.
Were you afraid to tell your mother that you were getting divorced?
Oh, God, I was afraid to tell my mother. I was afraid to tell my dad. I was afraid to tell my friends and my team and certainly strangers.
World.
Yeah.
Well, also, I think your marriage to the country music world was quite romantic because you're both singers and it looked like this kind of golden couple to the outside world.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And especially in country music where, you know, it's like family values are such a core of the genre where, you know, you get married and you stay married and you have a family and that's what you do. And that's not what I did. And that was really, really scary. And I went to a Church of Christ college, you know, this is like ingrained in me, like to my bones. And so it was like, I had to grapple with a lot of that internally before I even told my closest friends that I was, you know, that I was there. And so I think it felt like my life was like going to be over for a second.
Oh, wow.
But it didn't. It's only been like a really obviously difficult, obviously really complex, but it's been far, far, far greater than the fears that I had before I ripped the Band-Aid.
When I saw you performing Penthouse on SNL, which I thought was a beautiful performance, you did seem like you might start crying. Is it hard to perform it? Because you're probably performing it quite a lot.
I am. I didn't plan on doing any of these songs live, which is the other. I mean it. Like, I did not make this EP to talk about, to play, to do anything. And it just took on its own life. And I'm trying to honor that. So, yeah, I mean, I'm writing about a failed marriage, you know, like it's heavy stuff. And even though I'm certainly in a very different season of my life now and very, very happy, it's still, when you sing it, it brings you back to that place of these moments. So yeah, it's definitely emotional to sing. And it was then, it was, I think, one of my first times playing it. And I think it really just, it makes me sad that I was scared to do what I kind of felt for a while I knew I needed to do. I think that's kind of the emotion that I tie to that song now.
But the reaction has been so positive. People have been, obviously you touched a nerve in a lot of people. They responded so positively to the music.
It's been so beautiful. I think as I've tried to make sense of it, I think I've realized a couple of things. When you're happy in your life, you're probably spending a lot of time out with the people that make you happy, out with your girlfriends, having a night out with your partner, having a date night, on vacation, out. And when you're sad and you're going through something, you're spending a lot of time in, and you're spending a lot of time in quiet, and you're reaching for things that are comfortable, and music is one of those things. And I think that's why, you know, like breakup albums are some of the biggest albums in history, because people need music differently when you're sad. And so I think that's one reason that it has connected like it has. But then the other thing is, it's a brutally honest EP, and it's not a finger pointing EP. Like in country music, you hear a lot of like, I'm gonna key your car and I'm gonna burn your house down because you wronged me and it's your fault. And
I'm gonna key your car is big.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get out a baseball bat. Yeah.
Not every breakup is that stock. Sometimes it's the fault of two, and sometimes it's really intricate. And sometimes it's just time and it doesn't work out or whatever it is. And I feel like the EP, it touches on that kind of a breakup, which you don't really hear a lot of songs about, because it's, to me, not as interesting, but I guess it's very common. So yeah, I think that's where I kind of give the credit.
Well, I think it's also really emotional, and you can feel the emotion in the way you sing the songs. And it's, I imagine that can be difficult, probably it'll be difficult in 5 years, but right now it must be cathartic in a way.
Yeah, I think about a 20-something-year-old girl who got married really young, who is, you know, at that crossroads. I think about her listening to those songs, and I wish I would have had that. I wish I would have had those 5 songs, those 6 songs, to kind of lay it out for me and make me feel not alone and not so damn terrified. And that truly, to me, was the catalyst to even release it. So I'm glad they're finding it.
Did you like making the film?
I loved it. I loved it. I mean, I've been drawn to visuals my whole career, whether it's like stage production or music videos. But I knew I wanted to honor the whole EP. I wanted to give each song a video. And so I wrote the whole thing. I pulled my references. I sent it all to Patrick Tracy, who I made it with. I co-directed it. Like it's mine. It's my baby. And again, I didn't really have an intention for it other than I wanted to make it because I wanted to further tell the story that I was telling. And I really loved it. I loved the writing process of it. I loved learning how to kind of make it flow into a short film. I loved the acting piece of it. I really enjoyed all of it.
Do you have any interest in doing films in general? Because you have a great speaking voice.
Oh, thank you.
Some singers do and some singers don't. You have a great speaking voice.
I always said no. And it's only in the last few years that I've started to allow myself to ask what else, you know, because I'm like, okay, I'm a country singer. I want to be on the radio. And that was all I had the capacity to think about for years. And now I'm looking at my heroes, whether it be a Shania Twain or a Reese Witherspoon. And I'm like, oh, these women do a lot of different things. So what else do you like, Kels? Like what else? And I've realized that I've always said a hard no to the acting, film, TV world just because it scared me. I'm scared of sucking. I'm scared of failure. And now I'm running towards the things that scare me because I did the thing that scared me the most. And it's been such a beautiful payoff. So yeah, I'm really open to that.
So tell me, and I hope you say performing with the drag queens at the CMAs, but CMTs rather, what's your purely joyful time in your life?
Well, that was 4 minutes of pure joy. What's so interesting about this is I am such a peacemaker to my core. I mean, conflict scares the shit out of me. It is not my thing. I run from it. And I have, in the last year, become a disruptor. And that is, it's so interesting.
It's good. It's good. It's good.
I'm getting comfortable in it because I'm the happiest I've ever been. And I'm happy because I'm standing up for myself and the things that I believe to be right. And I think that is a legacy that I choose to leave now. But that was 4 minutes of pure joy and then about 4 weeks of get off Instagram.
Yeah, I'm sure there was some drama over that.
Oh, for sure, for sure. But I still stand by it. It's okay. I think my answer for this is every year I try to take a solo trip and a girls trip because my friends are just everything to me. I think I've replaced this want of always hoping that I had a sister into my friends. They're my sisters. Like they're my family, truly. And so every year I try to block some time from tour and everything to do a solo trip and a girls trip. And last year, me and my friends took a trip to Napa and we were there for like a solid 5 days. We rented this beautiful house and it was the most amount of time we'd ever gotten to spend together because we're all hustling. We're all in that phase of all of our respective careers. And we all just checked out, drank wine, had like real life, like deep, good, like soul-filling conversations, got absolutely drunk. Like we just did life together for 5 days. And I didn't realize how bad I needed that internal reset. And then right after that, I took a solo drive down the PCH. So I dropped all the girls off at the airport and I rented a Jeep and I, by myself, which I have not done in a long time. I took a couple of days to myself and I took my time and I pulled off to look at the seals and I pulled off to, you know, go have dinner by myself at an Italian restaurant and I slept in and I went on hikes by myself. I just did it alone for a couple of days. And
oh, wow.
That was, there's a song on the EP called Mountain with a View. And that was that trip. That was kind of where I really woke up to myself and my reality. And, so it was just, it was this beautiful ball of like youth and fun and light with the girls. And then the contrast of being alone and having to make some real life decisions. It was just a really pivotal week of my life. So I would say the 5 days in Napa with the girls was the most uninhibited joy I'd felt in a really long time.
And then when you got done with the trip, did you just fly back to Nashville?
Yeah, I did.
Wow. Because that's a long drive. I've done that. I'm from LA, so I've done that drive. That's a long drive.
Yeah, I spent a couple nights out there. Like, I really did take my time. It was nice.
Did you stay at the Madonna Inn?
But I passed it and I should have gone in. I didn't even go in. I'm mad at myself now.
You could have been in the Elvis suite.
Oh, I could have. Next time, next time.
There's always next time. Well, I'm so glad to talk to you, and I really admire everything that you've done. So thank you so much for speaking with me today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, of course. Thank you for the good conversation. I appreciate it.
Have a wonderful day, and thank you so much.
You too. Bye.
Thank you to Kelsey Ballerini. Stay tuned for another episode of Five Things with Lynn Hirschberg. My guest will be Wait and See. Five Things with Lynn Hirschberg is produced by Michael Beckert. Technical assistance and engineering by Rich Cervini and Max Solomon at Hanger Studios. The coordinating producer is Caroline Wolf. I would like to thank Carlene Donovan, Lauren Auslander, Brynna Rifkin, Court Barrett, and Sarah Moonves, who makes everything possible. The theme song is by Blondin Carr. And thanks always and especially to Zora.